Friday, October the 2nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. Thanks for joining us. Coming up, Russian airstrikes in Syria and why.
Vladimir Putin is emphatically saying to anyone, particularly those countries that are back in the opposition, the Syrian opposition, that Russia is not going to let the Syrian regime collapse.
Also ahead, yet another mass shooting at a U.S. school, plus Israeli and Palestinian leaders speaking out at the United Nations. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. Again, good to have you with us. Russian jets staged a second day of airstrikes. It happened in Syria on Thursday, targeting not only Islamic State militant extremists, but some observers charge also fighters backed by the United States. Russian Defense Minister Igor Konashenkov said that aircraft hit a dozen Islamic State targets, including a command center and two ammunition depots. Syria analyst David Lesh of Trinity University in Texas told VOA's Victor Beatty, Moscow has clearly taken the initiative in Syria.
Vladimir Putin is emphatically saying to anyone, particularly those countries that are back in the opposition, the Syrian opposition, that Russia is not going to let the Syrian regime collapse. So if any of these countries want to continue to back opposition groups, whether they be Jabhat al-Nusra, ISIS, or legitimate Syrian opposition, you better ante up and be prepared to be in it for the long haul. Otherwise, shift your efforts to bring an end to the conflict by backing the Syrian government, which, you know, would put everyone from the Russian point of view in a better position to take on the Islamic State and, you know, possibly ameliorate the refugee problem. Secondly, I think it's an attempt to secure Russian long-held strategic interests in Syria and, importantly, secure a seat at the diplomatic table in any sort of political process that may develop regarding a negotiated settlement. And Putin wants to make Russia an indispensable partner in the future of Syria, which would enable Moscow to secure and even improve its strategic position in the region.
According to media reports, perhaps as many as 36 people, maybe more, were killed in the Russian airstrikes. The Defense Secretary, Ashton Carter, suggested at his news briefing on Wednesday the Russian targets apparently were non-Islamic State.
Russians are adopting the definition of terrorists that the Syrian regime has long taken. That is, anyone who's fighting the Syrian regime are terrorists. I think although the Russians would like everyone to think they're attacking the Islamic State, they know that in the immediate term, the biggest threat to the Syrian regime, and therefore the biggest threat to Russian interests, are the reconstituted Syrian opposition groups, particularly a group called Jaish al-Fateh, or the Army of Conquest, which has experienced a number of victories against Syrian government forces over the last 6 months. And that's why they're hitting north of Homs, because that's where some of their forces are located.
Is the United States just going to allow the Russians to take the initiative in Syria?
Well, I think the U.S. can't really do anything about it right now. So, you know, for now, it's cautiously going along for the ride to see where this may go, particularly in terms of if it energizes or generates another attempt at diplomacy to reach a political settlement. I think we're hoping that the Russians are acting in, you know, less in self-interested strategic reasons in the short term and are thinking about the long term and holding the Russians to their word that, you know, when they say they want a negotiated solution and they want Bashar al-Assad to make the necessary reforms and that Syria has to be a different country in the future. Yeah, I think we're going to let them see if they can bring this about, because certainly no one else can. And so right now, I think the U.S. is staying on the sidelines, even though some U.S. officials, I think, are kind of like, fine, go ahead, Russians, try to do what you can, but you're going to get caught up in this quagmire that we've been avoiding all this time, and we'll be laughing in the end.
That is Syria analyst David Lesh, Trinity University in Texas, speaking with my colleague Victor Beatty. Now it's time to catch up with International Edition's G. Abby Lee about what's being said on Twitter about what's happening in Syria. You know, G., we just heard from David Lesh about how Russia and the U.S. differ on how to solve the Syrian crisis. Is this reflected in what's being said on Twitter as well?
Absolutely. Like we just heard, many academics and reporters say the two countries are not on the same page when it comes to fighting the ISIL in Syria, or rather, the ISIL or the Syrian government. And this is what Pentagon Press Secretary Peter Cook told reporters Thursday, according to one tweet. We're going to continue to encourage the Russians to take steps to target ISIS, another name for the Islamic State, going forward. Press Secretary Cook is on Twitter at Pentagon Press Sec, but he didn't tweet about the airstrikes himself Thursday.
That's very interesting, G. What about from the Russian side?
While the Russian government didn't change its stance in that they're targeting quote-unquote terrorists, but the Russian and Syrian idea of terrorists differs significantly from that of the United States. And this is what the Russian state-run television RT tweeted, quoting Syrian foreign minister. Russia's airstrikes do not target civilians or moderate opposition in Syria. It's quite interesting that they had to tweet that because you know what we say about strong denials.
Exactly. You know, the situation in Syria is also causing quite a stir in U.S. domestic politics as well. Can you give us an example of that?
Sure. Some presidential hopefuls from the Republican side are vocally against taking more Syrian refugees. And billionaire Donald Trump is one of them. Fox News made a meme out of his quote, and it's quite popular on Twitter sphere. It reads like this. I'm putting the people on notice that are coming here from Syria as part of this mass migration, that if I win, they are going back. And it's not that surprising coming from someone who wants to put up a wall between Mexico and the United States. That's all for me today, Steve.
And many thanks to you, G. That's International Edition's G. Abby Lee. You know, you can follow G on Twitter. Her handle is at G. Abby Lee. And you can also follow International Edition on Twitter. Our handle is at VOA_IE. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that afflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
This is VOA's International Edition. An angry President Obama demanded that the American people push Congress to pass common-sense gun laws after a gunman murdered numerous people, wounded others at an Oregon college on Thursday. A grim Obama appeared on television after those shootings. He said Americans have become numb to what has become routine. Mass shootings followed by White House statements and the response by those who oppose more gun control.
I hope and pray that I don't have to come out again during my tenure as president to offer my condolences to families in these circumstances. But based on my experience as president, I can't guarantee that. And that's terrible to say. And it can change.
Details of Thursday's shooting are still unclear, but local authorities confirm that the shooter was killed exchanging gunfire with police. 20-year-old gunman opened fire in one of the classrooms, and police immediately responded to emergency telephone calls. Also in the news, Israel's prime minister says the international community is naive to think that the deal to prevent Iran from developing nuclear weapons will lead to peace. Benjamin Netanyahu told the UN General Assembly on Thursday that the once international sanctions are lifted, Tehran will have billions of extra dollars in its war chest. And we go now to the United Nations, where VOA's Margaret Bashir reports that Israeli leader also urged a resumption of direct peace talks with the Palestinians.
Netanyahu gave a nearly half-hour critique of the nuclear deal that world powers and Iran signed in Vienna in July. He accused Tehran of ramping up its arming and funding of terrorist groups, rebels, and Syrian President Bashar al-Assad during the past 6 months, a period, he said, during which Iran was negotiating the deal with the international community and working to get sanctions lifted. He asked what would happen once sanctions are lifted.
Unleashed and unmuzzled, Iran will go on the prowl, devouring more and more prey. In the wake of the nuclear deal, Iran is spending billions of dollars on weapons and satellites. You think Iran is doing that to advance peace?
Almost as an afterthought, Netanyahu turned to the six decades-long conflict with the Palestinians. During his Likud party's recent re-election campaign, he said he was not open to restarting the peace process. But on Thursday, he reversed that position, declaring he is ready to immediately resume direct talks with the Palestinian Authority without any preconditions.
How can Israel make peace with a Palestinian partner who refuses to even sit at the negotiating table? Israel expects the Palestinian Authority to abide by its commitments. The Palestinians should not walk away from peace.
Netanyahu's offer comes 24 hours after Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas declared from the same UN podium that his people will no longer be bound by the 1990s Oslo Accords on a two-state solution, because he said Israel has repeatedly violated the agreements. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
And for some reaction to President Abbas's comments at the UN, International Edition's Susan Yaki spoke with Omri Seren, Managing Director, Press and Strategy at the Israel Project.
It's very difficult to know whether or not anything is going to come out of the statements at all. The Palestinian Authority and top officials at the Palestinian Authority have been saying that they're no longer bound by the Oslo Accords for at least half a decade, since at least 2010, when then-Palestinian Prime Minister Salam Fayyad said something almost exactly the same. And yes, and Reuters, when they wrote up Abbas's speech, they had this kind of aside in the first couple paragraphs where they said, repeating things that he's been consistently saying for 5 years, .. And then the Associated Press pointed out that he didn't even give a timeline for when these things are supposed to happen. So I think that this is, if anything's being read into Abbas's statements, and they're mostly being ignored, but if anything's being read, people are rolling their eyes at a repetition of past statements.
The Middle East peace negotiations were not a major focus during the speeches by the U.S. or Russian leaders or by many other leaders. Why do you believe that was?
Well, the Obama administration has made much in recent months about its commitments to double down on Israel's security, to work with the Israelis on the security challenges that the Israelis face, which, of course, also impact us here back home. But the reason why you didn't hear much about the peace process is very simple, which is the region has been overwhelmed by dangers that are much more pressing and by dynamics that are much more dangerous. And, you know, for years and years and years, there was a debate in the foreign policy community about whether or not the Israeli-Palestinian conflict was at the root of Middle East instability. It used to be called the linkage debate. And the answer has now been settled. The problems that are now plaguing the region, the Syrian civil war, instability in the Gulf, Shia Sunni tensions, those are all things that have nothing to do with the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, as people said for many, many, many years. And I think that what you're seeing is a realization among the world's leaders that that is indeed the case, and that the problems that have to get solved go far beyond and are in many ways independent of the Middle East process.
Omri Seren is Managing Director, Press and Strategy at the Israel Project. He was speaking with International Edition's Susan Yaki. Health program in Kenya is on track to reach its goal of treating 1,200 women who are suffering from obstetric fistula. Through the Fistula Foundation's Action on Fistula program, 582 women have been receiving life-changing reconstructive surgery in just over a year of launching the three-year program. Leslie Polacek is program director for Action on Fistula in Nairobi, and she tells VOA's Kim Lewis the effort has been so successful that they're looking at taking that model to other countries in Africa and around the world. She now explains the program, how it works.
So there are three main components of Action on Fistula here in Kenya, and that's treatment, training, and outreach. So in the first year, we've treated over 655 women. So that means providing life-restoring fistula repair surgery to over 655 women throughout Kenya. We've worked with FIGO, the Federation of International Gynecology and Obstetrics, to certify the first FIGO-accredited training center in Kenya that's based in Eldoret at GynoCare Fistula Center. And at that center, we've now trained 3 Kenyan surgeons newly trained in fistula surgery and are providing them the ongoing support through the duration of the program. And finally, on the outreach side, which is essential to do community outreach to raise awareness about fistula, to help women who are suffering with the condition know that it's treatable, and to really reduce stigma so women feel comfortable coming forward.
Can you just give us a little bit of a background on what causes fistula?
Fistula is caused primarily by prolonged obstructed labor. A woman will be in childbirth for a very long time, often many days, without the necessary medical attention that she needs to relieve that obstructed labor. So it happens quite often in places like Kenya and other parts of the developing world where many women give birth at home without a trained birth attendant present. And she won't get emergency obstetric care that she needs. She won't get a C-section that she needs to relieve obstruction. So what happens is after a prolonged period of being in labor, the woman can develop a fistula. And a fistula is a hole in the birth canal that causes chronic incontinence. So the woman most often loses her child. In over 90% of the cases, the child is stillborn. And then she's also left with this devastating physical injury, which leaves her incontinent, which is also incredibly psychologically damaging and challenging because of the stigma and the smell that goes along with the incontinence.
How does treatment of fistula, how does that change a woman's life?
Fistula treatment is one of the most transformative surgeries that you can provide to a woman. She's lived often for many years or even decades, socially isolated from her community, from her family. Many women end up being divorced by their husbands once they develop a fistula because they're not able to have sexual relations, or they are leaking urine and they're smelling, so the husband might run away or abandon them. They had no idea that this treatment was even possible. They thought that they did something wrong, that they were cursed. And so being able to show them that this is a medical condition that is treatable is absolutely life-transforming and life-changing.
Included in your fistula treatment network, you all are also sharing the information with men. How do men respond to this?
It's essential that we include men also in our outreach activities and sensitize them to the work that we're doing. Men are key decision makers in the context we're working in Kenya, and it's critical to have their support both in helping their wives or their sisters or their mothers coming in for surgery. And it's also key that once the women return back to their communities, that men are aware that this is a medical condition. It's not a curse or something that their wife has done wrong. And really involving them in the process is really key to a smooth transition in and out of the communities. And it's also key to involve men because they often are respected elders and respected members and religious leaders in society. So involving them is helping us sort of spread the message that fistula is both preventable and treatable.
You mentioned moving on to other countries with your program. So how soon will you be doing this, and what countries are you looking at next?
We are very excited. This model that's never really been done before, sort of linking together treatment centers across the country. And with help from our funder, Astellas Pharma EMEA, we've really been able to do that in a way that I don't think we anticipated the success. We're really looking at taking this maybe to places in Southern Africa as well as Asia. So we have a great team that's sort of putting our heads together and seeing where we can go next.
That is Lindsay Polacek. She is the program director for Action on Fistula in Nairobi. She was speaking with VOA's Kim Lewis. This is VOA.
This is BizBeat.
Volkswagen headquarters in Wolfsburg, Germany, the center of a firestorm following the disclosure that VW used stealth software on millions of diesel cars in the U.S. The code allowed the cars to pass emission tests but run unrestricted the rest of the time. The scandal has caused a huge problem for the company, forcing the chief executive to quit and ripping its reputation in tatters. American consumers who bought the so-called clean diesel Volkswagens are furious.
I can't drive like a car that like ruins the environment.
The multi-brand German carmaker sales are sure to be hurt, according to Matt DiLorenzo, editor of Kelley Blue Book.
They had aspirations to sell between Audi and VW a million vehicles a year. I don't think that's possible anymore.
To make matters worse, at least 27 U.S. states are opening investigations into Volkswagen. For VOA's BizBeat, I'm Philip Alexio.
This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us today. Now it's time for a little something from our music department. Here's our own Peter Heinlein.
The pop music world is in a tizzy. New albums galore pouring out, and the big one, Drake. Drake has dropped a new album on the market without any fanfare, no hype, no pre-promotion, and it's just gone berserk. With us to talk about that is our lady DJ, Shauna Renee. Shauna, what's going on here?
Well, Drake, who, as you know, is one of the biggest names in hip-hop and popular music right now, just released what he is calling a mixtape, a surprise mixtape with producer and hip-hop artist Future. This is the second time that they've worked together, but the first time that they've actually released a project of this magnitude. It went straight to number one with absolutely no promotion, or very little promotion, I should say. He, on Instagram, released what looked like artwork a couple of days before the album dropped, which led many people to speculate that something was coming. And then he did a concert the Saturday before it, or the Friday before it released on, it was released on Sunday, and said, yeah, Sunday is going to be big. And that got people wondering what was going on. And he has a show on Apple Radio. And during the show, he said, hey, guys, guess what? Got a full album for you featuring Future. And it went straight to number one on the Billboard Top 200 chart.
Well, what does that say about a guy by like Drake?
Well, it's definitely a testament to his star power. And I think what it also says about the industry as a whole is that we no longer need all of these long, drawn-out promotional tours or campaigns that once were standard in the music business.
He's changing the promotional landscape. And all the big budgets that are spent, he's calling into question whether they're any good at all, whether they're worth anything.
Well, he is continuing a trend that actually was started recently by Beyonce. Many people may remember last year, Beyonce released her self-titled debut album, kept it secret, not only from fans, but everyone in the industry. No one knew this thing was done. She had been rumored to be having a lot of trouble with it and was going to scrap the whole thing. Next thing we know, she drops it in the middle of the night. And that was what changed the game. And so I think Drake is just jumping on board.
Beyonce and Drake, though, are sort of in a class by themselves. There are a few of them, but most of the others probably still need a fairly big promotion budget, don't they?
And I think you're right. I think you have to have a name for yourself and a pretty large fan base. And you have to have sort of created a sense of anticipation among that fan base in order to do this successfully. But, you know, every now and again, you'll hear about a smaller artist who has its own little niche fan base doing the same thing. And again, as you say, it saves a lot of money. I think the record labels are trying to find a way to incorporate this into their standard practice.
What's the big song, the big number on Drake's new offering?
You know what? Nothing stands out, and that's what makes it so incredible. He didn't release a single. So, and because it's a mixtape, it's all over the place. There are freestyles. There's some older stuff. So I don't know that there is one. I mean, it's one of those albums that you can listen from the first track to the last.
No theme, no by nothing that holds it together?
And that's what a mixtape is, without a theme. Now, I will say that there is a track that speaks to his recent beef with Meek Mill, who is Nicki Minaj's boyfriend, and they've had this big thing going back and forth.
Tell
so
us
that's
about
the,
that.
That's the track that sort of everyone was kind of looking for, and he delivered.
What does he say? Come on.
Well,
give
you'll
us,
have
give
to
us
listen to the track to
Can
see,
we
but
hear it?
He lets everyone know that he is fairly confident in his position on top of the world of hip hop, regardless of what anyone else may think.
Whoa, the world of hip-hop is pretty exciting.
It is, it is.
All right, well, I'm afraid it's my kids' generation, but it's your generation.
It is. I'm going to hold on to it.
All right, and you guys out there can find Shauna on Twitter at VOA Lady DJ and Inside the Soul Lounge on voanews.com. That's Shauna Renee, and that's music from VOA International Edition.
Crying rays going crazy, crazy, come on, young niggas so thirsty. Couple commas made a purchase. Caught the wave, ain't surfing. Caught the wave, ain't surfing. You do what you want when you pop it. Yeah. You do what you want when you pop it. You do what you want when you
pop
it.
Yeah, pretty exciting stuff. That's Drake's song, Jersey. Yeah. It's not the one that they were just talking about. That one, I don't think we could play for you, actually. I listened to it, and, well, anyway. Pick up the album, though, if you'd like to have it. Also from the world of music, Janet Jackson. We all know about her. Unfortunately, she's canceling several shows over the next week or so at Planet Hollywood Resort and Casino to rest her vocal cords, and the Las Vegas stop on her Unbreakable tour will move on to a new 20,000-seat arena that will be in May. The move is a loss for Caesars Entertainment Corporation, which owns the venue at Planet Hollywood that features regular performances by other stars such as Britney Spears and soon Jennifer Lopez. Jackson's comeback album, Unbreakable, being released later today. That's nice music, isn't it, huh? Love it. It's not Drake, but it's pretty good stuff. Listen, thanks for joining us here on the International Edition of The Voice of America. World News is straight ahead. And for our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Jim Harmon, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. Have a nice Friday.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Over seven decades, the United Nations has forged a system of international rules and norms that is better, stronger, and more stable than anything that came before it. It is this international order that has underwritten unparalleled advances in human liberty and prosperity, said President Barack Obama in his remarks to the United Nations General Assembly on September 28th. However, some nations see fit to contravene international law. They justify their behavior by claiming that the UN ideals are unachievable, antiquated. In their view, order must be maintained by force if necessary. The rights of individuals are irrelevant. But history shows that regimes who fear their own people will eventually crumble, but strong institutions built on the consent of the governed endure long after any one individual is gone, said President Obama. Indeed, the international community must improve its collective capacity to establish security where order has broken down, and to support those who seek a just and lasting peace. Together, we must protect the powerless, said President Obama. But we can do much more.
Helping people who've been pushed to the margins of our world is not mere charity. It is a matter of collective security. And the purpose of this institution is not merely to avoid conflict, it is to galvanize the collective action that makes life better on this planet.
Working together, we can roll back preventable disease and end the scourge of HIV/AIDS. We can eliminate pandemics that recognize no borders, eradicate extreme poverty, erase barriers to opportunity. And we must pursue inclusive democracy, because countries are stronger when people govern themselves. History is littered with the failure of false prophets and fallen empires who believed that might always makes right, said President Obama. But we are called upon to offer a different type of leadership, leadership strong enough to recognize that nations share common interests and people share a common humanity. We must call on member states to work together more closely under the UN framework. All members should support the ongoing efforts of the special envoys to forge political consensus, buttress essential peacekeeping endeavors, and utilize the full range of conflict prevention tools. Working together, we can assure a brighter and more peaceful future for our world.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.